Hi everyone and welcome to the Covered Mindset podcast with McGinley Coaching. I'm your founder and host, Laurie McGinley. Today we're joined by Sammy Lander. How are you, Sammy?
I'm very well, thank you, Laurie.
Can you just tell the listeners about a background about yourself?
Yeah, so it's been a bit of a crazy journey. So I'm 26, so I'm still relatively young in the industry of football, so it's still a long journey, I hope, ahead of me. But I started as, I've never played, I had an injury in my right eye, so I lost the sight in my right eye when I was younger, so I've never been sort of an ability to play. So the next best thing for me was coaching or scouting or working within football. So started as sort of an intern at a Premier League academy alongside working for a Step 3 team at the time. And then my journey has sort of just like rocketed up to most recently being appointed as football's first substitution coach with AFC Wimbledon. And then since then, I've sort of gone on to be a consultant for sort of various teams. And I've just come back from the US, which has been a really cool experience. So, yeah, it's been a really good journey. It's only been 5-6 years in, but hoping there's a long way ahead yet.
And a lot of coaches nowadays are interested in kind of sports science and the kind of nutrition and also set pieces. But a substitute coach is actually something I was really intrigued with, because I think you were on with Gary Kernan, and I thought this is actually really incredible. Can you just tell the listeners what is a substitution coach and what it involves and how you kind of help the team, you know, with the positive, but also sometimes even negative, you know, like when things go wrong with, you see, like at Chelsea or Man United, when decisions go wrong, there's also, the manager gets the blame or the head coach gets the blame no matter what, and they have to take the praise, but also take the hit. What is the kind of role? How do you define it?
Yeah, it's a great question, and it will change through every club I sort of talk to and work with, because the beauty of the substitution coach role and football is that there's so many elements and parts to it. So I've been into some clubs where they really like the fact that I am someone who can resonate with younger players and have been educated in a way to create a culture that's a little bit more we, not me, and have sort of strategies that help players get over that disruption of not starting. So I've been into clubs where my main role has been as almost like a psychologist, where you're just working with players. But I've also been into clubs where they really enjoy the data side of the role. So it will change depending on what the club wants and what they think they need. But effectively, my job is to ensure that substitutes are performing to a higher level than when I came in. And that's through the three words that I tend to use, are being more deliberate, effective and consistent. So the more deliberate I think we can be with substitutions, and you take away that substitute with a hope and start substituting with a bit more of a plan and being deliberate, then it will create sort of this more consistent and effective substitute, which is what at the moment in the world of football everybody needs, because football is such a game of fine margins that every single action carries so much value that you can't really afford to waste anything anymore. So it's a way of trying to exhaust this rule of football where we get to bring five fresh players in.
Yeah, because a lot of coaches, younger coaches react on instinct sometimes, and it's they want to change it because they have to please the fans or please the players, and sometimes it's actually making a substitution is for the sake of it, can actually interrupt and not actually flow. What do you think? Why do you think a lot of coaches struggle with making the timings of substitutions? Is that something you've seen in the data recently? Because I know you talk about a lot, you use the data to help with the kind of decisions, but sometimes it could be something to do with like coming back from an injury, or the players not, or there could be an incident in the field where they're not doing the job. What's the kind of, why do you think that coaches sometimes go for the 70-minute mark or the 80-minute mark or change things? I've seen, see the Rugby World Cup, that in the Springboks, they changed their kicker in the semi-finals after 15-20 minutes, and that was unheard of. But that would never happen in football, because it would be, you know, just basically subbing a player after 20 minutes because they've not done the role. What do you think of that?
No, it's a great question, and I think you hit the nail on the head with sometimes, I think a lot of coaches and managers sometimes just go with instinct, sometimes I think they feel the need to make a substitution when maybe when you look at the data behind it and we start talking about the whys and the hows and the whos of a substitution, then potentially the alternative is you might be better off not making a substitution. So for me, I think a lot of managers, and this is just through when I speak to them, we have open chats, is that they tend to say that they substitute with a time in mind, but very rarely do you see two games play out exactly the same way. So to substitute through sort of a game-driven perspective, for me, isn't really effective because, as I just said, no two games play out exactly the same. So for me, it's about becoming more player-driven with our substitutes and trying to be a little bit more focused with the individuals that we're bringing into the game rather than the game itself. Obviously, there are considerations and factors that you have from this game because that will help you decide what substitute you need. But that being said, it's matching the right substitute to the right game scenario that's going to bring this sort of like possibility of it achieving success. So, yeah, it's a really interesting one. I think, like I said, I don't think it's necessarily through not being educated in football because all these great managers have been in football for years. But I think it's the case that no one has really cracked substitutes yet. There isn't one team that are consistently unbelievable at substitutes. Teams go through spells where they're good, but no one has ever cracked it yet. So it's a case of you can't really rely on these patterns to sort of help you. It's a case of instinct and trial and error, I think.
Yeah, because you look at, I think it was the Americans, they called it game changers, you know, like the women's team. It was really interesting. I used that a little bit. Say we use a lot of, you know, terminology and jargon, you know, and sometimes it's just a simple, you know, way of thinking. But also that little bit of that change of wording could potentially help the player. You know, like, I'm a game changer, so I need to go and change the game. But it might be defensively, it might be going to score a goal, it might be doing something. But the interesting one is a lot of it's goalkeeping substitutions. You know, you see you've got specialists that are penalty savers to ones that are... I was listening to a podcast, what was it, last week, and they talked about tactical. It was actually Gary talked about it on his podcast, and he talked to a coach, a goalkeeping coach, and he said about there may be a tactical substitution for a goalie. You know, like the ones that are the team that's crossing the ball, they might change their goalie for a taller goalie or a bigger goalie because they might be better, but they may not be as good on the feet. But going back to, like, you look at, you know, maybe Tim Krul, you know, I think the Dutch, it was 2010, I think it was, and Louis van Gaal, and he changed, he had the full squad, and he changed the three goalies, but he had him as a special. Do you think that's, obviously data has changed a lot in the last 12, 13 years, but do you think that's a gamble, or do you think sometimes it's a calculated gamble, or sometimes it's just a bit of desperation to go, do you know what, I need to put something that... He's got a better save percentage in the penalties, but he might not be as good for the 90 minutes. It's something that I know you've kind of done a lot of research on this and talk about Wimbledon in a minute, but is that something that... I don't know if that's something you've seen across the board because it's quite a difficult subject, but it's also... It's not as clear and cut as taking a defensive midfielder out for another one, you know, because it's the specialist role.
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I would say that there's two aspects immediately, I think. First, it's the culture and the psychological aspect. You know, is this keeper ready to play that role? Because if he's not, then regardless of his characteristics and his patterns, if psychologically he's not ready to just get 2 minutes at the end of the game, that can massively hinder his performance. And is the goalie that you're taking off, you know, is there sort of an understanding that this scenario is going to happen? So that's my first thought, is something like that. Has it been talked about? And the second thing is, if there's rationale behind it, then I see no reason why you wouldn't do it. And I actually think, obviously you touched on there where you said it's slightly different to, you know, changing a CDM. I actually think it's exactly the same. If you've got a goalkeeper that's good at this certain aspects, and then you've got a goalkeeper who's good at this, and the game needs this, you're going to put the right goalkeeper to the right situation. And I think it's exactly the same with the CDM. You know, Kante and Rodri are both CDMs, but they're completely different players. So if you've got a player that you need to have high possession, confident on the ball, receive under pressure, forward passes, break lines, then you're going to go Rodri. Mm. If you need someone who's going to be a little bit more energetic, anticipate the counter-attacks and all the rest of it, then you're going to go Kante. So for me, I think it makes good sense if you can find data and rationale behind it, because I think if you're just doing it through a hope and a guess, that's when I think scenarios and substitutions don't tend to work out.
Well, let's talk about scenarios then, because a lot of coaches, like I love constraints. Like sometimes it's like we sometimes when I'm working, I've got players that I've got, let's say it's a 10v8 or something like that, or we've got 11v11, and I say one of the players is off for 30 seconds because they've been yellow carded or red carded, and it's a different thing. But I also sometimes flip the way of thinking of, do you know what, we've lost our goalie for 25 minutes or for a game or two games, you know, and we can't sub him in, you know what I mean? But let me rephrase it, we've got a sub, but they're not goalie trained, but they could probably use it. But sometimes, as you say, you need to have that perception of, you need to look at scenarios. See, when you've got like a player getting subbed in for a goalie, you know, because they're maybe an injury or they're down to 10 men or something, is that something that, do you think a lot of coaches look at two or three goalies on the bench now, or do you think sometimes goalies just have, there's just one in the field, and they have, let's say there's eight, you know, on the kind of sidelines that potentially could play in goals, but they're not. Do you think nowadays people are going to go with one or two goalie or one more on the bench, so therefore it's that extra sub?
I like the thinking behind it. I actually went into a club, I'm trying to think when it was, last 7 or 8 months ago. Do you know what I mean? It was fairly recent, and we discussed a little bit about goalkeeping. I was talking to the goalkeeping coach, and he said, how does your role sort of affect the goalkeeper on the bench? And we started talking through the logistics of it and some of the ways that I do it in. And I mean, firstly, I love substitute goalkeepers. I think they're the most professional players I've ever met. They constantly strap up their hands, they have their tops, they warm up like they're ready to play, they make sure that their number one is warmed up. And I think if the outfield players all had the similar attitude to the backup goalkeeper in terms of being ready for your role, ready at any point, ready, making sure your players ahead of you are ready, then I think just being a substitute massively increases the standards. But touching on your question, these guys have done research to find out that typically a backup goalkeeper, through injury or red card, will get something like 28 minutes a season. So they knew through this research that typically goalkeepers aren't really ones to get substituted, and very rarely do they get sent off. So your backup goalkeeper doesn't really get much time. So they were actually debating whether they would put any goalkeeper on the bench, because is it a waste of a substitute because you know that you're not going to use them? Now, my stance is a little bit more, I think you need to have someone there, because I think they play, like I said, they play an important role in the game day. But I think it's an interesting topic of conversation. And I mean, having gone off the data, I would always have a goalkeeper. I know that when I was at Weymouth in the National League, sometimes we wouldn't have a goalkeeper because we'd only get to name 5 substitutes on the bench. So, you know, to name one goalkeeper when he's going to get 28 minutes a season is potentially a position or a place in that team that we might have needed somewhere else. So, no, it's an interesting topic, and I think the best people to ask on that would probably be the goalkeeper coaches. I think they would probably have a firmer opinion on it.
Yeah, that's probably, we could discuss that probably today for another 10 hours of different ideas. But talking about kind of Weymouth, obviously working at a kind of non-league level, and obviously working at Wimbledon, you know, AFC Wimbledon, you obviously need to get buy-in from coaches, you know, and head coaches, because end of the day, you know, you're the one, if you suggested something and it doesn't work, then you're the one, publicly they're going to take the blame, but privately you're going to get, you know, shouted at, because a lot of, like, I was speaking to a coach last week, talking about warm-ups and all this, and if it's not, the warm-up's not to the standard, then the players will not buy into it, but also the staff will just go, oh, this is a bit lazy or something. But when you're working with a small group of coaches, you know, and you've suggested this idea of a substitution coach, and I just wondered that, what was their first impressions of that? Because sometimes people, like, I love thinking outside the box, but sometimes there's even ideas of, like different free kicks or throw-ins, or I just wanted to know what your kind of first thoughts were on their reaction to you. And then the second part is, you work at a kind of higher level, you need to get the buy-in from the players pretty quickly, because the boss is going to protect you no matter what. But you can, at the end of the day, you need to do a job. I'm just wondering what your impressions are on the first one, and the second one is working with a bigger staff, so therefore they have to look at you, this outsider coming in, to basically help, but sometimes it could hinder, you know, like change the environment.
Yeah, so working, first of all, presenting the role to staff has been a learning experience, because there's definitely been staff members at clubs that I've worked with who have been very aware, or cautious, I suppose is a better word, cautious of the role. Because like you said, typically when you say substitutions coach, I've had even my mates say, what do you do, like send the subs out to warm up? Like, you know, like they simplify it and they base it, which is what football does, isn't it? And then all of a sudden, like, I'm not contributing in any value. So, and you do get coaches that are like that, but those coaches don't tend to be the coaches that I work with. Do you know what I mean? It tends to be, they say no and you go, okay, fair enough. And so for me, it was a learning experience about trying to pitch my idea to forward-thinking clubs. So trying to think of an example, but you know, I went into Brighton and pitched the idea to the men's and women's, and they loved it. They loved the fact that someone is putting more demand on a substitute, that they're creating a process for a substitute, and that they're trying to improve the performance of a substitute. So the first question in terms of staff is you have to be deliberate with who you pitch to. And again, the throwing coach, Thomas, who has been amazing with me, has openly said that as well. He said, you know, you can talk to people who don't necessarily want to see your ideas, and in that case, you're just wasting your breath. So you've got to be deliberate with who you pitch to. The second answer is players have been superb. To this day, I've not had a player ever resist anything that I've tried to implement. Plays a little bit on me in the fact that it's my personality that brings it to life. You've got to be energetic, charismatic, positive, and be a real energy around them, and that helps. But secondly, it's helping them solve a problem. You know, them being a good substitute does benefit the management team, but it also massively benefits their career if they can become a good substitute. So for me, that's why players buy in, is because it's helping them solve a problem that they experience. And then the third obviously question is, since I've gone into a consultancy role, it's changed a little bit. Last year, I actually did have a contract with a team, so I was there a little bit more full time. So again, you can build those relationships. But there have been times where I go in, you know, one day at a time. And that's, again, that comes down to you then having to build a good relationship and a trustful relationship so that you can sort of show them that you've got the value. And the data is so in depth and the process is so different that managers and coaches tend to buy in straight away because it's like, wow, like we've never seen anything like this before. So, I hope that answers your questions.
No, that's actually interesting, because I wanted to touch about, we'll touch on the kind of consultancy in a minute, but it was like, you looked at this, and this is the thing I'm kind of interested in, you know, like, you're pitching the right things to the right people. You know, like, if I'm a possession-based and attacking coach, I'm not going to go to a club that's defensive, you know, and vice versa. And I spoke to a lot of sporting directors in the last year, and they say you have to pitch the right thing to the sporting director, but a slightly different way of thinking to the owner or someone, because in the day, they don't really care too much about this, they care about that, you know, and the information, just be, it could be a 5-minute conversation to get you a job, but you've convinced someone, but you need to prove what you're doing is correct. And that's the thing, you look at like a Brighton or a Brentford or a, you know, in Norgeland, you know, they're very much data, you know, based, you know, and that's something you talked about, the kind of club there, you know, Brighton, you pitched ideas and they loved it because that's something that they're interested in, you know, their models based on data, but also that kind of money ball and the idea. Do you see when you, this is a bit more, you know, a bit harder question to answer, but you've also pitched the to clubs, but see when you've got that club and you went to another club and you think they would like it and you get that rejection, you know, like, quite sometimes people just don't want to listen to other things, not to do with coaching, maybe just don't like. I always say there's certain coaches will go for certain clubs, you know, I think Sir Alex Ferguson said pick your owner, not your club. But see when you get a vibe of thinking, well, actually this is quite good, and then you get the rejection, and then you get another vibe of, oh, I don't think this is very good, and you get the, oh, this is actually accepted. How do you feel when you have to present, when you're maybe backs against the wall a lot of times, but also you feel you've wasted your time, but it's actually not. You've actually impressed them. It's just more, I'm interested in the kind of emotional intelligence side of things, because as coaches we all want to learn and deal with things, but I'm just wondering, because you're not, it's sometimes full time, sometimes part time, sometimes you're only in, you know, a couple hours a week. Again, we're talking about consultants, as I say, how do you try and fill that time to go, do you know what, I've made a mistake here, or I've not went to the right club? But is that experience maybe that you've kind of learned over the years? Sorry, that was a long good question.
No, it's a good question. Again, I suppose the first answer is you definitely have to tailor the presentation to who you're presenting to. So, you know, lucky enough to present to Phil Neville the other day, and that was just all about data and all about how you can improve a player's experience of being a substitute, and he loved it. I presented to a technical director a couple of weeks ago, and he almost didn't care about how you can improve a player. He just wanted to know how many points you can add a season and how much more money that's going to bring for the club, and then how much more money they can invest into that club. So you have to take that presentation, because, and that's come through experience, like you said, because I've gone to technical directors and I'm talking about how I took this player who was a young Premier League player, and he was an awful substitute, hated the role, and how we brought him through to be a great sub and a finisher and energiser, and we had a great relationship. And of course the technical director appreciated it, but it wasn't necessarily relevant to his role. As soon as I got onto the fact that I've then added 12 points this season for this club through substitutions, technical director's ears prick up and he's like, okay, well that's another two places up the table, which is another 300 grand in prize money, which is a big lump of money considering we're going to pay you, you know, X amount of money. So, you know, you've definitely got to tailor it, and by tailoring it, that's how you get their interest. And also your second question, in terms of whether I've presented and I think I'm losing them, or I think I am maybe not getting the buy-in that I thought, that tends to come to me as a person rather than the role. I think that because the role is so niche and a little bit different, you have to be the person that A, brings it to life, but B, convicts it. So if you don't believe in what you're presenting, I think that's a major downfall in terms of people can look at that and read that, you know, you're not invested in this. I think when every club I go to, I know that this will add value. I know that it will add value to their process. Whether they choose to pursue it or not is completely up to them, and I respect it. Football's a game of opinions. But I know that I will be able to improve every team's substitutions that I present to, because that's why I'm presenting, is that I believe that there is an area of weakness in their data or process. So you just have to really convict what you're presenting, and when you come with that passion and that like energy of like, I believe in this, I want to help a, you know, make a difference, that's when you tend to get the buy-in from people. I think the word charisma, I think, is massive when you're presenting, because it's a privilege to be able to present to some of the people that I've had. Like 5 years ago, I was a, you know, tiny speck in football. You know, I was an intern in an academy, and now I'm stood in front of some of the, like, the biggest progressive teams in Europe and the world presenting this work. So it's a privilege to be in front of them. So you have to make that platform count.
Oh no, definitely. I think it was Atletico Madrid head coach Diego Simeone. He said, energy excites, charisma inspires, which I actually love that, because he talks about his energy is just always just through the roof. You know, like, I've been to the Wanda, and it's just like, you look at these things, wow, this is, he controls the crowd, controls everything. But I've got one final question, I know we're kind of tight in time. Consultancy, you know, it's like running your own business, and can be kind of daunting sometimes, but also it can be the most rewarding thing. Just two parts. What is the kind of consultancy? And see, when you've had to deal with maybe things that have went wrong, or how you deal with that kind of mindset of, oh, this is actually a lot difficult, more difficult than I thought, or there's a time limit and I'm thinking, I don't have the time to do this, not just because I might run out of time, you know, because it's a finite thing. What's the kind of, what's your plans for the kind of future? What's your plans now? And where can people kind of reach out to you, you know, speak to you about your kind of role?
Yeah, so the consultancy's been a really good experience, you know, because, like I say, for me, it's sometimes pinch me moments, because 5 years ago, I was, you know, not necessarily where I wanted to be in football. And 5 years down the line, I'm not saying I'm anywhere near where I want to be, but I'm a lot closer, and I'm in a position where I, you know, feel really lucky to be presenting and have some of the conversations I've had and go in to watch training and that sort of thing. So the consultancy in that sense is brilliant. For me, the biggest thing that I enjoy about football is committing to a process and being involved in the process every single day. So the future for me is going to look like trying to get back into a club, you know, whether that be in the data department, in the coaching department, in the analysis department, you know, because the substitution role touches on all of it, you know. So it's about trying to find where I best fit in the club's process. But yeah, the future for me looks like signing back for one club and, you know, committing to their process and being involved. But the future, I'd like to think, you know, I've got aspirations to be a Premier League manager. You know what I mean? I want to win the Premier League. I want to get to the very top. And, you know, I'm 26. I've got average age of a manager is probably 40 right now. So I've got 14 years before I'm hit the average age. And that's even if I go over peak, do you know what I mean? So I've got so much time. So it's about, you know, using where I am now to my benefit, keep learning. And I think one day I would like to be like a first team coach who just specialises in substitutions, you know. So you help out with the day-to-day run of the club, Monday to Friday, and Saturday you maybe come into your substitution role. But yeah, I don't know. I've got so many plans, you know what I mean? I've got such a big career bucket list. It seems to be getting longer every day. So, I had a talk with a podcast guy the other day who said, potentially rolling the substitution thing out as like a course and just having people, you know, come and I present my work, my clips, my data and all the rest of it and have people learn from it and then go back to their own clubs and improve substitutions. So, yeah, I've got loads of sort of things I want to say that I've done in my career because I want to have I want to try and build a legacy, I suppose. But, the end goal for me is, you know, work in the Premier League and be part of a Premier League management team that wins the Premier League. So,
definitely.
Hopefully that's where I'm going.
No, I'm very ambitious too. You know, like, I think I would love to win a Champions League. So I'll try and see when I get the job. I'll just hire you as the, you know, one of my assistants. But no, thanks again, Sammy, for taking the time. I appreciate it, and I'll put the link of the kind of the consultancy in the kind of show notes. But no, enjoy your day.
No, really appreciate it. I really like to say, big fan of the podcast. So it's been a real privilege to feature. So thank you.